Good evening, everybody. My name is Robbie W., and I am an alcoholic. That's probably the most important thing I'll say. I always say that. I don't know why. I'm really, really very, very grateful to be here tonight. And I'm also very grateful that the nice warm welcome I've received from everybody here in North Carolina. And I'm glad everybody asked to come up, came up with me, and we're all here doing this together. Tonight I'm just going to tell you a few little things about myself, what it used to be like, what happened, what it's like today, what it used to be like due to my alcoholism, and what happened to me due to my alcoholism, and what it's like today due to Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's funny because, of course, I'm a little nervous. And a lot of people, especially our chairman, John Kay, from our Area 45 up in New Jersey, just said to me before I started, you know, I said, John, I'm going to be fine because I listened to all these speakers on the tapes on the way up. And I'm remembering this one fellow from Connecticut, this other guy from British Columbia, and I got a couple great things to say. And he said, Robbie, do us all a favor and just be yourself, you know, and you'll be fine. And it's pretty neat. I come from a family where there's absolutely no alcoholism and no drug addiction that can be traced anywhere. You are looking at the beginning of it and hopefully the end of it. And that's a little rare sometimes because I know a lot of fellows and women that I've met in here have come from families that have had drinking problems and drugging problems and broken families. I don't have a broken family either. I have a beautiful mother and father and little sister. So, like, everything's perfect for me growing up except for me. I found when I was young I was a little insecure. Just a little insecure. I didn't necessarily have a reason to be insecure. I was pretty good in sports, and I was pretty smart, and I had a lot of friends. I grew up in Philadelphia, and hung around the corners and played basketball with the guys and did all the stuff. But for some reason, I was always insecure about something. And I guess at the ripe old age of 12, one day I picked up my first drink, and all of a sudden my insecurities were gone. And I sort of liked that, you know. When I would drink, I didn't have any insecurities anymore. And I just enjoyed drinking. I wasn't, of course, at 12 and 13 and 14 and 15 and 16. As I started drinking as a young buck in high school and all that, I'm sure I drank like the rest of the guys. I understand today that there's guys that go through high school and don't drink, and I don't necessarily understand that. But I drank, you know, like maybe at the high school dances or whatever, or on the weekends, and we would just go out to have a good time and all. But what eventually happened is somehow, somewhere along the line, you know, unlike the rest of the guys and gals that I grew up with, I didn't grow out of it. I just loved it. You know, I loved drinking. I shared that recently at a meeting. I don't know what I was doing, if I was just raised my hand, and I mentioned how much I really liked doing it, and somebody was upset with that. You know, but I can just tell you, when I drank, I enjoyed it, okay? I enjoyed everything that came along with it. I enjoyed leaving all my inhibitions to the side. I enjoyed losing all my insecurities. I enjoyed the friends. I enjoyed the everything that came with it, everything. And but what eventually started happening is, and I didn't know it, but I started, you know, I started hearing, you know, like from my family, I would hear from my parents, you know, gee, Robbie, it just doesn't seem like you're drinking normally, like a normal person drinks, like say on the holidays or on a weekend night, and you're just not happy when you drink. I started hearing these, you know, tapes early on in my teen years, and I'd always just brush it off and you know, starting to get into that denial stage. And one thing would lead to another, and then I started finding out that I'd, of course, always be the first one to arrive at some of the high school parties and always the last one to leave, and that it didn't matter who was there, you know, just as long as there was alcohol there. Nothing really mattered after a while. Somehow I graduated from a private Catholic prep high school up in Northeast Philadelphia, all guys, you know, so I was there for school, you know, I wasn't looking at all the girls and all that stuff. I thought I was, you know, and everything was great, and But as soon as I graduated from high school, and because of alcohol, you know, through my high school, I really had no urge to go to college. I had no urge to, you know, to become somebody, to become a police officer, a state trooper, an attorney, a lawyer, an accountant. You know, I wanted to party. I wanted to drink. you know, and that's all I really wanted to do. I loved alcohol. And that's what I set out to do. I set out, and then I look back today and I wonder, you know, and I realize all the things that I could have been doing, you know, going to college and having a good time and getting an education and starting a career and possibly meeting a girl and getting married and having a family. But all I wanted to do was drink. You know, it's a pretty simple, basic story I have. But it started getting a little different as I grew a little older, as I started getting into 19 and 20 and 21 and 20. I started finding out that I didn't have any friends anymore. I started getting in a lot of trouble just over drinking. I got caught in other people's cars and trucks without their permission. And the reason for it, I remember one night, honest to God truth, all I wanted to do was drink. I did not want to steal this fellow's truck. I wanted to drink. And I was in Philadelphia, and the drinking age was 21. And it was outside a pizza shop, and it was running. And over in Jersey, right across the Tacony-Palmyra Bridge, it was only 18 to drink. And I was like 18 or 19 years old. And I jumped in the truck like a good drunk, and I went over there and drank. And I got caught. And I always got caught at anything that I did. Remember Robert Wagner in It Takes a Thief? He was so good and cunning. They made him the special spy because he could get all the thieves because he was so good at it. I could never be It Takes a Thief because anything I ever did, I was always drunk, and I always got caught. Okay, always, no matter what it was. I've gotten beaten up by so many drunks, you know, like, you know, and it was all over drinking. It was all over drinking. I was a very sloppy drunk, and I was a very mean drunk, you know, very immoral drunk, and all those things that come with it. Unfortunately, at about the age of 20, my parents found out about that program called Tough Love. And they kicked me out. I hated that program. I was doing really good, you know, like drinking all night and having a good time and slinkering in at 12 o'clock the next day and sleeping and all. And my parents were enabling me for a long time. And finally they found out about Tough Love, and they kicked me out. And I found out I loved it, you know. I went out in the streets, and I found out that I didn't have to hide my drinking anymore at all. I could just drink and have a good time. And I loved that. I really did. I learned what it was like living on the streets. I loved that. Okay? I don't know why. I had nobody to answer to anymore. And I could have all the alcohol I wanted. And I generally got my alcohol by doing things against the law. And it was just... And I was not a thief. I really wasn't. I was not a con artist. I wasn't any of those things, but I had to do those things in order to drink. And that's the only reason I ever did whatever I did. I've heard people say in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't know if I'm going to quote them right, but I know it doesn't sit right with me. When I hear somebody say, well, you take the alcohol out of a car thief and you still got a car thief, that's not true. And I'm here to tell you that's not true. Because they took the alcohol out of me finally in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't steal cars anymore. You know? You know, and sometimes you hear things and you say to yourself, well, wait a minute, I've lived that and now I'm living a different way, and maybe they're talking about something that they don't know what they're talking about, you know. And sometimes I really listen and I just shake my head sometimes. But generally at AA meetings I'm shaking my head like this. I'm a head shaker because I tend to come to meetings and just shake my head. And I understand, you know, because I'm here for the right reasons. The long and short of my drinking history was the fact that, I ended up, through my drinking, of course, in penal institutions. I ended up in prison. I'm just going to say about 3 years inside of prison, you know, give and take, you know, a year here and a year and a half there and all this stuff. And I know what, I've been inside mental hospitals. I used to think I was basically just talking to the psychiatrist and interviewing them, but that wasn't going on. You know, I know what it's like living on the streets. I know what it's like. They didn't have detoxes back before I got sober. That was not around back in the late 70s when I was getting ready to come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. They just took you. They took me to a hospital when I would come. I remember still, like, coming into a hospital. at 2 in the morning, all drunk, very drunk, and, or whatever time it was. And now I would get in there, and I don't know why they would bring me there, but I would end up there, and they would, like, pump my stomach and this and that. And all of a sudden, it's about 4 in the morning, I feel completely drained. All of a sudden, somehow they get you sober. I don't know how they do that to this day. And then I have nowhere to go at 4 in the morning, you know, and, like, no one to call at all. You know, and I can remember getting locked up, and I used to always laugh, and I really did, if you've ever gotten locked up before. And the police officer in the district, he says to you, kid, you want to make a phone call? I had nobody to call, you know. My parents, my little sister really wanted to have nothing to do with me by the time I was about 21 years old at all. And I did a lot of horrible things to them. I did a lot of horrible things in the neighborhood to my family name. You know, and it was all over alcohol, though. All over alcohol. Finally, one night, I'm sleeping in this apartment building's washer and dryer room. Okay, I liked it. It was heated. It was close to public transportation, close to the shopping malls. I used to love Hickory Farms. You know, with the cheeses and, well, anyway. But that's the way I had to eat. You know, for me to eat when I was drinking, I had to go into 7-Elevens and, you know, wear extra large pants and, you know, and that's how I ate. I put stuff down my pants and you know, I know what it's like to be in a 7-Eleven at like 3 in the morning and have this 7-Eleven czar clerk against the, you know, got me against the counter and all the police officers are there and, you know, getting locked up. And it is humiliating when I wasn't drunk. You know, that is humiliating. And I was doing it just to eat. You know? And I had to do that because I wanted to drink. But you know what the sin of all of it is I didn't know there was a way out. I didn't know there was a way out from the way I was living because of alcohol. I was a young guy. You know, I knew what a drunk was. I knew what an alcoholic was. An alcoholic was a guy on Skid Row. An alcoholic was that fellow that lived across the street when I was growing up and used to beat his wife and used to always go down to the corner tap room. It couldn't be a 21-year-old kid running around the streets without a home and getting locked up and going to mental hospitals and getting beat up and doing everything I could do to drink no matter what. Just think about some of the things that you've done to drink, and I've done them. I don't need to talk about all of them. But I'd do it because I needed to drink, and I wanted to drink. And I hear other people say sometimes that they knew they were an alcoholic. I didn't know. I did not know that I was an alcoholic. I didn't know I had a problem. And I'm talking about, you know, when I got sober in 1983, they didn't have these 28-day rehabs. They had like 12 months to 24-month rehabs. You know, and the judge would say, well, you know, and they look at me and he'd say, you have a choice of either rehab or prison. And I look at all the guys getting ready to go to prison and I'd say rehab. And, you know, and but the thing about it was, is that they weren't 28 day rehabs. I had to stay there for like a year. And even through all that, you know, I learned how to make my bed well and stuff like that. But I didn't. I would get out of those places that I still wouldn't know I had a problem with alcohol. And I can't. And as honest as I'm standing here, I did not know I had a problem. That's how powerful alcohol is. They talk about that and how it works. Cunning, baffling, and powerful. It was really powerful. And it really got me. Anyway, I'm in this room. I'm in this washer and dryer room, and these in Northeast Philadelphia. And honest to God, truth, it's about 4 blocks from where I grew up at. You know, I had no morals, no pride. I didn't. And these two police officers from Philadelphia pulled up, and apparently in their paddy wagon, got out and got went in there and got me and stood me up. And I wasn't drunk. I can still remember this day. I wasn't drunk, and I was just sleeping. You know, I needed a place, and they said. They said, get in the wagon. They threw me in the back of the wagon. And you know how, like, with the wooden, they're wooden, and you up and down the bumps and bang your head and all. And for a normal ride to what would be, like, the 15th District, which is one of the police stations down there. And then you would, if they had done that, then after that, you stay all night and you get some cold eggs, excuse me, and some cold coffee in the morning. And eventually you end up in this place called the Round House, which is like the police administration building in Philadelphia. A few of my Jersey friends are saying, yeah, I've been there. And that's why they're here with me. And then you would spend some time in there for about 24 hours, a couple fights, and a couple different things being done to me I don't want to really talk about, and me doing, And then you go to the House of Correction, and then 90 days later you get transported down to City Hall I got locked up so many times for vagrancy. You know, I had no ID. I was nobody. I graduated from a private Catholic prep high school with honors in 1979, and by the time 1982, I had no identification because alcohol had me identified. You know, it had me identified. It wanted me bad. Well, anyway, these two police officers decided for some reason not to put me through that ringer. I don't know why. To this day, I don't know why. Maybe one of the fellows was a friend of Bill's. I don't know. And they dropped me off at this 7-Eleven, right? And I figured maybe they're getting a coffee. You know what I mean? It's my time. They'll probably get some coffee, donuts. They come back and open up the paddy wagon door, right? And I figured they're going to beat me up. I didn't do nothing that day, I didn't think, but I probably did something the day before. I probably deserved it. I've gotten hit with all those things on the cops' police officers' belts and prison guards' belts, and so I was used to it, you know. But these police officers, they weren't going to beat me up or nothing. They got me out of the back of the wagon, true story, and they took me into that 7-Eleven, and there was no one in there at all except for one fella, and he was in the back. He was in the back, like all the way back where that fellow was sitting in the back. And I remember looking at him, and he looked at me, and I stared him down like the old West. I'm looking at him, and I was, you know, what's he looking? He don't look too good, you know. And I remember walking up to him, and a police officer gave me a little bit of change. And he said, open up your hands. And he gave me a handful of change. He said, go ahead and get some cigarettes, get a coffee. And we want you to talk to that fellow in there. I said, okay. See ya. And I didn't know what was going on. And so I go back and I meet this fella and I'm walking up to him and he extends his hand. And this is the first time I ever heard this. And he said, hi, my name's George and I'm an alcoholic. You know, that was my very first introduction to the rooms of alcohol, to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. He went on to tell me, I told him my name was Rob. He went on to tell me all the things that alcohol had done to him and all the things that had happened to him because of alcohol and all the things that he had did, these slimy things, the things he had done. And I can't relate to the guy. I'm thinking, why is he telling me this stuff? You know, somebody clue me in here. And this is how alcohol had me. I still, you know what I mean? So he keeps on talking and he keeps on talking and finally says, you know what? And you can stay with me tonight. And I said, what's this program called, Alcoholics Anonymous? I like this program. You know, all of a sudden, I'm thinking I got a place to stay. You know what I mean? I'll take a shower. I had one of them for a few days. And this fellow, you know, and I came from places like prisons and places like where if you're going to give me something, you're going to want something back. And I was streetwise. And I was looking at him and I was looking at him. And he didn't impress me. He had an old pair of jeans on, a T-shirt. It didn't impress me. I think he was sober for 3 years, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous. So we get home to his place that day. He didn't even have a car. We were in this trolley. We took to his place in Kensington, right? Not one of your better neighborhoods in Philadelphia. And so we get to his place, and his place was unruly. And we're getting ready to go to bed that day because he had to work the graveyard shift at night. And he says, okay, there's one stipulation. And I said, I knew it. I knew you were up to something, pal. And he says, no. He says, the stipulation is tonight before I go into work, we're going to get up and we're going to go to an AA meeting. And honest to God, truth, I might have been to a meeting before this inside a prison, inside a rehab. I really might have been. I don't remember. And I went to this place called New Life. In Kensington, it's an AA group, and I went there, and I said, okay, I'll go to a meeting with you, no problem, pal, I'll satisfy you, you know, so I went to the meeting that night, and ladies and gentlemen, that night, I knew I'd found my home, that very night, for some reason, I was ready to hear the message of recovery, And I heard, I remember sitting in prison. I remember sitting there, you know, when your cellmate goes to sleep, he's right across the bunk from you, and he goes to sleep. And I remember sitting on the edge of my bunk, or maybe laying there under the covers and crying, you know, when I would be, you know, sober, a sound mind, no alcohol in me. And I can remember crying, you know, and saying no one in the whole entire world knows the remorse and despair and the degradation and the humiliation that I feel at this moment. And many, many nights I cried myself to sleep in those places, in rehabs, everywhere, on the street, when no one was looking, you know, when I didn't have the alcohol in me. And for some reason, folks, that night I found out that I was wrong, that there were people that felt just like me, you know, that that felt that despair and that loneliness due to alcohol. I can't tell you about anything else up tonight, anyway. I'm not here to talk about anything other than my alcoholism, because that's all I know about. They talk about a singleness of purpose in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm a young guy. You know, I know a lot of young guys and girls in there, and they want to talk about this and that and the next thing, and they give you great reasons why they're doing it. Great reasons. And they sound good. But there's also that Washingtonian movement, and they had a lot of great reasons to get into politics and all these other different things, and they were helping drunks, but they failed. And I learned that I'm here in Alcoholics Anonymous today to share about my alcoholism because of singleness of purpose. Because I guess they say, we know one thing, and that's alcoholism and how to recover from it. And let's just stick to that. That's all I can tell you about, okay? It beat me up bad. It got me to a point where one day in a rehab, in Godenzia House, this place up in Philadelphia, and they'd shave your head and do all these different things to help you stop drinking and drugging. One day I was in there, and it got to a point. This is in 1981, I guess. It got to a point where I was not going to go on any longer. I mean, I got to a point where I was in these rehabs and everybody hated me. I'm talking about you people were there. Other alcoholics were there and you hated me. My parents hated me. The authorities hated me. And then I go to these places and these people hate me. I'm thinking, this is crazy. You know? And then I look in the mirror and I hate me. I did. I hated myself because of alcohol, where it got me to. I completely hated myself. And the point that I got myself to, I hated myself. And so one morning I said, that's it. You know, and I'm almost at the third floor, and I got in my little window. We had a window in the rehab, my bedroom window, and there was no one in there, and the door was closed, and my head was shaved because of something I had done. And I had the window up as high as I get it. And as I sit here and breathe, I am telling you the truth. I was in the window, and my one leg was hanging out, and my one leg was in. I couldn't push myself all the way out, and I wanted to. And I was trying to do it. And I was looking down, and it was all cement. There was no question what was getting ready to happen. I know, you ever been to, you're at your job, and you hear somebody committed suicide. Right, you hear somebody, name somebody. And the guy, you're in the lunchroom, and the fellow says to the woman, you know, somebody you work with, and they say, you wonder what goes through their head. How could they do that? And I sit there quietly, but I know. You know, you say certain things in the lunchroom, and certain things you say here. And, you know, and I know what was going through. I know exactly what's going through their mind the split millisecond before they commit suicide. I know it, my friends. And I know that alcohol is what got me to that feeling. And all of a sudden, there was a knock on the door. And I'm telling you, I'm in the window. I'm in the ledge, and I'm going out. I'm not putting up with it anymore. It beat me. Folks, alcohol beat me. And that was all there was to it. I just couldn't handle it no more. Everybody hated me. And there was a knock at my door, and it was the good Lord in the form of a patient there. And he said to me, Robbie, come on out. I love you. You know, just come on out. Everything's going to be okay. I remember it to this day. And I didn't want to come out. I didn't want to come out because I had to face everybody with a shaved head and Mr., you know, hey, look how good I look and all. And I had to go out there with a shaved head. And my humility wouldn't let me go out there. But this guy came in, he hugged me and said, you'll be all right. He didn't know what I was getting ready to do because by the time I let him in, I was off the ledge and all that. But, you know, I was saved that moment, you know. And I didn't get sober. I didn't get sober right after that. And I ran from that rehab and all that stuff. But, you know, but I mean, experiences that I went through alcohol tell me that I'm here for a reason. You know, I'm here for a reason. You know, so I get in here. I get into Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And I got into Alcoholics Anonymous in Kalamazoo, Michigan. And I went up there on a sales job. I'm a salesman. And I went up there on a sales job, and I was in AA, but I was just drinking beer. And let me tell you something. You laugh. That was good for me. And I was just drinking beer. And so I got out to Kalamazoo, and of course that led me back to my Southern Comfort buddy and all the rest of the stuff. And before you know it, they fired me. And there's a little clause in my contract whenever you're a traveling salesman, and they always would give you the money to get back to the town where you started. And so they gave me this $100 to get back to Philadelphia. And I said, nothing's in Philly. I'm drinking. And I stayed in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and I drank. And I had a good time for a little while. And then, of course, eventually I hit bottom again. And one day I ended up in a clubhouse out there that was run by AA people. And on November 1st of 1983... I apologize. On October 31st of 1983, I walked into a Halloween dance at this clubhouse. All these sober people were in there hooping up and, you know what I mean, having a good time in masks and enjoying sobriety like we like to do after we get sober for a little while. And I was in my cups, man. I was a little bit hazy and I was out and I knew I needed you people. And I walked in there and I ordered a coffee and I sat at a table. You know how they always put tables out at these things just because certain people don't want to do that, but they want to. So I was at one of these tables. Through the grace of God, there was this guy there named Gangster Bob, another normal AA name. A Gangster Bob and this woman named Pat that I'll never forget to this day. And they didn't care about the dance that night. They didn't care about their friends that were there. They didn't care that one of them was the chairperson and the other one was the party decorator. They stayed with me at that table for a couple hours. And they know I needed help. I get emotional sometimes in AA. And I was crying and this and that, and I need help. And that night, that was the last night I drank up until this day. So my sobriety date is November 1st of 1983. For a young guy, right? And so I've been sober ever since then. And there's a reason. Because on November 1st, I went back to that same clubhouse, and there was this guy there named Don C. And I still remember, you know what Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob used to say to clients, you know, prospective clients? They used to say, do you want to stop drinking? That's pretty simple, you know? They didn't necessarily, do you want to get honest and open-minded? Do you want to go follow the Lord? Do you want to do 18,000 steps? Do you want to stop drinking? And, of course, if the client said no, they'd move on to somebody who would want it. And this fellow Don C. said to me, Robbie, do you really want to stop drinking? And with all the honesty I could muster, I said, yes, I do. And he said, come on home with me. And he threw me in his truck, and I went home with his family, his wife and his two little children. And I lived there for my first 11 months of sobriety. He took me in. You know, that's Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and I'm not going to say my hereditary family did not want to have anything to do with me, but I couldn't go home there because of my actions due to alcoholism. And so they nurtured me back to health for my first 11 months, and I went to meetings begrudgingly. I trudged that road and went to meetings a lot, and I hated it. I hated Alcoholics Anonymous, and I really didn't like you people too much. And I didn't like the person I was becoming. I didn't like short hair. I didn't like not cursing. You know, I didn't like getting dressed up. You know, I didn't like listening to this music that I had to I liked rock and roll, I liked long hair, I liked cursing, I liked hanging out. I liked drinking too, and I couldn't do that. All these things that you people were about, I had to start doing, and I didn't like it. But for some reason, I You know, and a lot of people can put their finger on it, but for some reason, you people had me. You know, I was willing to do anything early on that first year. I really was. And I didn't have a sponsor, and I say that for a reason. Because, you know, we do these steps, and we read the steps and all this, and one step talks. I felt guilty as hell, put it this way. I felt real guilty for something I had done prior to coming in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was a burglary, okay? And it was really just to drink. I really was, because I was stealing things so that I could pawn them off to drink. But I got caught, but then they let me out before my court date, and I went somewhere else. And but then I'm sober, I'm talking about all this prudence and all, but I'm practicing evasion. And I didn't feel right, and I didn't have a sponsor. Maybe if I had a sponsor, it would have talked me out of it, but I turned myself into the authorities. And I went up to Philadelphia, and I turned myself in. I thought it was going to be like America's Most Wanted. You know, here he is, we got him, it's going to be cameras and all. And they couldn't figure out who the hell I was for about 2 hours. I should have stayed put where I was in Kalamazoo, Michigan. I would have been fine. Turned myself in. I finally figured out who I was, and they gave me 6 months in a prison up in Philadelphia. And remember, so I'm sober 11 months, and so my year anniversary, there's an AA group that comes into the prison. This is, okay, I'm in the House of Correction at this point in Philadelphia, and there's this group from Philadelphia, South Philadelphia. Tough guys, you know, Rocky, Sylvester Stallone, tough guys come in, and you don't drink. Okay, and you shut up, and that type of thing. And they come in, you know, and I swear to God, I raised my hand. They said, anybody got any anniversaries? And I raised my hand. I said, I got a year. They said, shut up. Come on, just keep coming back, you know. And that was my year anniversary in AA. And then I went to get paroled, and I went in front of the judge. And I was sitting there. I never had a lawyer. I used to watch O.J. Simpson with these lawyers. I never had a lawyer. I always had public defenders that were assigned to me, you know, and lawyers. That's funny. And my public defender looked at the judge and said, Your Honor, Robert has served 6 months, and we believe he's rehabilitated, and he would like to be paroled to the streets. You got to get paroled when you have time. And the judge looked at me and then looked at my rap sheet and all. She said, 6 months. Genesis 2. This is some rehab in Philadelphia. And I'm thinking, give me a break. You know, I'm going to this now. I'm going to another rehab sober. But I went through it and I did what I was supposed to do, and I got out. Okay, and I still didn't have a family. Now I have about 1 year and 9 months sober, and I still don't have a family that wanted to talk to me or deal with me. And I don't know if I wanted to talk to them right then and there, because I just wanted to not drink and stay sober. And one day at a time, I went down to a place where I live now in Wildwood, New Jersey. It's a short town, and I got a job, and I got involved in AA right away. And that was when I had a year and a half sober, and 10 years later, I'm still very, very, very involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. I enjoy it. You know, I'm involved in a clubhouse down there, a clubhouse. Nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous, but we're all sober people that keep it going. And I only hear bad things about it, you know. As you're here, well, you know, be careful going over there, because you know what they're doing over there. It's just the guys and the girls and this and that, and a lot of drugs and, people right off the streets, you know, they smell. And things like that. And, like, you know, I'm there to help the drunk, you know, that I used to be like, you know. And I love that place, you know. And I say this before, you know, and I always say, you know, either I don't see it or I'm just not looking for it. You know what I mean? I'm staying in the positive. You know, I'm trying, and I'm just looking at the positive. You know, I get, and I'm a young guy, so a lot of young guys ask me to sponsor them all the time, you know. And, like, I just don't have any time for negativity. Do you know what I mean? Because it's too easy for me to be negative. It's just too easy. I wake up out of bed and I think about retiring from work. You know what I mean? I think about just doing nothing. You know, I think about negative things. I think about, you know, impure thoughts. I don't think about, like, how can I help the next suffering alcoholic? You know, I get up, you know, so I need to go to AA and to go to big book meetings and go to 12 and 12 meetings and then go to tradition meetings, you know, and to go to business meetings. Man, that's where sobriety is. If you know, if you're not involved in a group
and you got more than one day of sobriety, right, and you don't go to the business meetings, you haven't enjoyed recovery yet. Because I'm telling you, man, that's great. I mean, you know what I mean? Just all the egos flying, and you know what? Oh, you know, and it's usually after a spiritual meeting. Then all of a sudden, everybody's yelling and killing each other, and you're crazy, and you know, smoking and not smoking, and oh, God. But I enjoy business meetings. I always have. But so, recovery. I stay involved. And actually, I don't even like involvement. I like staying committed to recovery. You know what I mean? And, you know, I've heard it. One of the first 100 alcoholics, one of the first 100 was down at one of my home groups in Wildwood a few years back. And I know we've all heard this, but I got to say it because it means so much to me. And he said, you know, the difference between being involved and being committed. Okay, you hear people all the time that make coffee. They're involved, aren't they? They raise their hand at meetings. Very involved. You know, they even sweep the floor. They get there early and open up the door. They're so involved. You know, and the difference between being involved and being committed, they when you had breakfast and you had ham and eggs, you know, the chicken was involved, but damn it, the pig was committed. You know, right? And there's a difference there. And I got to be committed. You know, when the Flyers are on, well, I'm from Phil. Okay, where are you guys? When Duke's on TV or whatever, or the Tar Heels, or, you know, that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. You know, there's an AA, there's a business meeting, and I got to get to it. There's a meeting that I need to go to. You know, I don't like saying no either. I don't like saying no. It's just not in my repertoire in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've heard a lot of people give a lot of good reasons why to say no. And I just don't say no. I say yes. You know, I guess I grew up in the chairmans of groups and all that stuff, and then GSRs, and now for the last 2 years I've been a DCM of my district, right? Now I drive everybody nuts, but they have a good time. You know, I got a little district, right? We got like 22 groups, and I got like 20 of them showing up, right? And they're scared. They got to show up because I'll call them, you know, all the time and say, where were you? Your group's not going to be informed. And we got, what do we got? We got newsletters, and we got traditions plays going on, and we got public information committees and all that stuff. And you know what? Honestly, I don't like doing it. I really don't. I swear to you, I don't like doing it. But it keeps me sober. And I don't want to go back to being that old person. I don't want to go back to being the old Robbie. So I'm sober 6.5 years. 6.5 years, and I hated the holidays with a passion. You know why? Because all my friends in Alcoholics Anonymous say on Thanksgiving, you know what they're doing? When I'm at the 8 o'clock Thursday night meeting, you know, there with about 8 other people, they're coming in all dressed up, and they're sharing they just got back with from their family's house and had a beautiful meal. Or it's Christmas Eve, or it's Christmas night, and they're wearing their new clothes into the meeting. And they just got back with their family and their new wife and this and that and their mom and dad and their kids and all, you know? And I was sitting there crying inside because I still didn't have my family back. You know, 6.5 years sober, I still didn't have them back. My sponsor was on me. My boss at work was on me. Everybody was on me to get back with your family. It's time. And I was afraid. I had fear. I really did. I hated step meetings because it always talked about the things that I was not doing, that I should be doing. And so on December 20th of 1989, I made a call. And I said, hi, Mom, how you doing? Oh, hi, son. And we talked on the phone. We wrote a few letters. My little sister, cute little girl, great girl, career legal secretary, I mean, legal, yeah, all that stuff, paralegal, everything. And I said, December 20th, 1989, I said, hey, Mom, how you doing? Oh, great, son. How's everything? Merry Christmas to you. Oh, same to you, Mom. Everything's going great. Yeah, I got a new little Volkswagen. Oh, great. You know, and then me and Dad are doing this. And great. I said, Mom, and I you know, 6.5 years, you think I would have a little bit of courage. I didn't. I was scared to death because I was so humiliated. I got to move this microphone. I was so humiliated from the things that I had done in my alcoholism. I really was. I was ashamed of what I had done. And I knew it was a disease. But it was, and if you've been through it, you know how I feel, how I felt. I was just ashamed. And I said, Mom, would you mind if I come home for Christmas just to say hi? And there was a silence. And I remember the silence. And she got back on the phone and she said, Son, we've just been waiting for you to ask. That's all I had to do. This is the 20th of December, 89. The 25th. What I used to do during the Christmas holidays and New Year's holiday, I used to run alcathons at this clubhouse in Wildwood, New Jersey. Not because I wanted to help everybody have a great holiday, because I wanted to forget about that I didn't have my family. And I wanted to have meetings all the time and just, you know what I mean? I was hiding. And so they were having an alcathon there that morning that I had started. And I went in there and I'm six and a half years sober and I'm shaking and the coffee's going all over the table and this and that. And it's 6 a.m. I got my best Kmart sweater on, you know, and I'm ready to go. And there's these guys with 60 days telling me, you're going to be all right. And I didn't feel it. I was scared to death. And I didn't have the courage to go. I really didn't. I swear to God I didn't. And I remembered where I lived, but I just didn't have the courage to go. And I went. And I just had a little bit of courage, and I went. And I showed up at the door. You know, I knocked on the door, and my dad answered, and he said, hi, son, come on in. My mom was there. And we were hugging and all this stuff, and it was real beautiful, you know, like the prodigal son and all that stuff. And all of a sudden, my dad came down the stairs with a big bag of presents for me. You know what I mean? He gave them to me. I didn't have nothing to give them but my sobriety. That's all you people gave me, you know? At the time, believe it or not, I was working at like a hospital as a supervisor of housekeeping. I wasn't making any money. I had a little car. But you know what I had? I had the courage that you people taught me to face any situation as long as I didn't drink. You know, and that anything could be rectified as long as I didn't pick up a drink. And I faced it. And I met my sister for the friend. I met a brother-in-law that I never knew I had and all this stuff. And it was a nice experience. It was a nice experience. And 5 years later, we have a beautiful relationship. A beautiful relationship. I'm there all the time. I got the key to her house. I got a key to her summer home. We go up there and do... I mean, it's just, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous works, you know. You know, I love seeing somebody in an AA room try to debate this thing. I love it. Please try to debate that this thing don't work when I'm in a room. Please. Please try to debate it. Because I'm willing to talk. I'm willing to raise my hand and tell you people that it works. Unequivocally, it works. Emphatically, it works. You know? If you work it. If you live it. You know? So I'm staying sober. Now all of a sudden, I got 11 years of sobriety. And one day at a time, I'm going about life, and I'm going to a lot of meetings, and I'm at DCM, and I'm actually got another title this year. What am I? John, I'm a correctional facilities chairperson at Area 45 where I'm at, and I do that, and talk to all the different intergroups, and this and that, and do all these different things. But you know what? I was still missing something. You know, and I'm single. I've been single, you know? I'm single, you know? And God, I'm single, and I had girlfriends and all, and I got sober, and I got picky, you know, I wanted everything right, and I would go out with an AA girl, and she'd be controlling, and I'd get rid of her, or things like that, and then all of a sudden, I go to, and this is how it works, I go to an AA wedding, one of my good buddies, Ronnie Pig, was getting married, to Nancy, and I go there, and I got an AA girl on my arm, and we're all happy and all this stuff, and I see this girl from across the room here. It's my good buddy's cousin. She's not one of us, you know. It's my good buddy's cousin, and she's with a guy, and you know, the eyes across the room, and one thing led to another, and I really did pray about it, you know, and one thing led to another, you know, And I went, and I ended up dating this gal. You know, we got each other's phone numbers on the sly. Good alcoholic. And one thing led to another, right? And I took her to an AA getaway. What do you call it? A skiing getaway up in the Poconos, you know? And they had this great speaker up there. He's telling his message, and he's enthusiastic, and he's great, and all this stuff. And here I'm in cahoots with a chairperson. He's going to call on me as soon as he's done. And there's about this many people in the room, right? And I happen to have that little ring in my pocket. And so he called on me, and I stood up. And he said, I want to call on Robbie W. from Wildwood. He's going to talk about commitment. And all my friends know me. And they're like, oh, my God. You know, we're thinking we're going to get... We hear this guy all the time. You know, he doesn't shut up. And so I stand up, and my girlfriend's even saying, holy jeez, what do we got going on here? And so I stand up, and I start talking about commitment, commitment is so important to me and all this stuff. And I said, but you know what? There's been one little thing missing in my life. And I got on my knees, you know what I mean? And I gave it her, and I proposed to her in front of all these AA people. Man, I was crying, and she's crying, it's on tape and all that stuff, you know? And it doesn't get any better than this. And John's though, you know, this, and this is called freedom from bondage, right? I just blew that one, didn't I? But so I'm engaged today. I'm working in a wonderful field. I'm in sales, and I'm in a career that I love going to my job. I really like going to my job. You know what I mean? But I pray on a daily basis that I don't lose what I've gained from my commitment to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, sometimes I see people and they think that AA means getting out the book when you got a newcomer and 90 meetings in 90 days and don't drink and go to meetings and get a sponsor and get a big book and get a home group, you know. And that's not Alcoholics Anonymous for me. Because I just talk through experience. I don't talk about books and big words. But when I came into AA, you know what AA was for me? When I leave a meeting and a guy would come up to me and he'd say, you want to go out for a burger? I'd say, yeah. You going to take me? I didn't have no money. I probably didn't take a shower that day, you know. But he's going to take me. He cared about me. That's Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And we all know this. Going into a prison and seeing these guys inside. And okay, 50, 60% of them, who knows what the percentages are, who cares, that are there for to get the paper signed or to get the coffee or to look at what girl might come in or what guy might get. But the certain percentage that are there for the message, you know, and they're tired of being where I was, you know, and where you were, you know, because of our drinking, you know. And that's what I like to do today. I like to give it away, you know what I mean? But I can't give away what I don't have, you know? And I got to be true to myself, like it says on the back of that coin, you know? So today, I make sure I have a sponsor today. I'm able to talk to him on a daily basis. I have a home group today. I go to that on a daily basis. And, of course, I'm committed to Alcoholics Anonymous with service positions. Just because I don't want to... And I see friends of mine that get married, and then they forgot what got them there. You know, and they disappear. I've been, 11 and a half years. There's a lot of guys and girls that I came in with that may or may not be drinking today. I don't know, but they're not around. And that's a short time. And I can imagine Bill must know many, many, many people. And I don't know why. But, you know, in every other part of life, it makes sense. If you work hard on your job, you get there early, you leave late, you study. You know, if you do all those things that it takes to be a successful person, you'll be successful. That also works for me in Alcoholics Anonymous. If I go to, but sometimes we don't equate that. I think that I can just come to AA and sit in the back and not be heard and just be a part of. Let me just be a part of this thing, you know, and just show up. Maybe that'll be enough. You know, I'm not taking a chance. I'm not taking a chance that that's going to be enough. Because I don't want to go through the hell that alcohol's put me through. I got a little vendetta. You know? and I stay in Alcoholics Anonymous and I get rid of it, you know, and I help somebody else to get out of me, you know. And the last thing I want to talk about, I got to just share this one thing because I love talking about courage and faith, and it's this. And as an old timer in my area, I just happened to be at the meeting one day and he shared this story, and I love to hear it, and it means a lot to me, and I hope it means something to you. And I always relate stuff to sports, but there was this fella, and he was a football player, and he was a star running back for the team, okay? And he took the team all through the season, game after game. He carried the team. He helped the team win a lot of games because of his playability. And his father was blind, but he was in the stands every game, you know, with the headsets on. He was in the stands every day with the headsets on, and just we're just listening. And there he goes, and he's up and down the field, and another touchdown. And the kid would score a touchdown and spike it, look up in the stands and see his father, you know, in jubilation. You know, and it just did something for him, you know. And the team got to the championship, you know, and that day they're in the locker room, and the coach is giving the team that rah-rah, and come on, this is the last chance you got, one game, you can do it, put all, you know, all that rah-rah stuff a coach will do. And all of a sudden, the phone call comes into the locker room. And here it's the assistant coach got it, and here the poor fella, the fella's father had passed away, had a major heart attack on the way to the stadium. Okay? So what do? You know, he comes up and tells the coach, and they're trotting out in the field, and he says, geez, oh my gosh, if I tell him, we don't have a shot. We're not going to win the game and all that, but if I don't tell him, oh, am I responsible? What do I do? The coin flip happens, okay? The teams are assembling for the kickoff, and one thing leads to another, and all of a sudden the coach runs up to him, and he says, kid, I got to tell you something. He says, before the game, your father passed away. He said, we will completely, 100% understand if you don't play the game tonight. No questions, no problems, no guilt. Just, son, we understand. The game started. All of a sudden, the first series for offense goes out there, and he runs out. Runs out in the backfield with all the conviction that you've never seen in somebody in your life. And he played the best game of his career. It was they killed him. They clobbered him. Great game. And he's running off the field. And he's a little emotional. You know, his father had just passed away. And he's all upset, and he's thinking about it, blah, blah, blah. And the coach runs up to him, and he says, son, I just want to know, how the heck did you do this? How did you go through with this? And he says, he looked up at him, he says, coach, he says, I thoroughly believe that that's the first time my father saw me play. You know? And it's that kind of faith and that kind of courage that I learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I'm not that bad kid anymore that I used to be. You know, I'm not that kid. You know what I remember, guys and gals? I see one of my friends going to a bar and I might entertain it. You know what I remember? I remember it being 6 o'clock in the morning and the sun's coming up. I remember being in somebody's car sleeping because I had no choice. I remember getting thrown out of it. And hearing, get out of my car, you bum, you don't belong in here. But I didn't have a choice. Alcohol didn't leave me a choice. I had to be there. I needed to sleep. I had to get out of the elements. And that's where alcohol took me. You know, I don't know if it took you there. For a lot of people I've met, it took a lot further places. Some a little bit not as far. But all I do know is that if you're like me, and that you're an alcoholic, you're definitely in the right place. And I know that with your help, that I can stay sober for another day. I want to thank everybody for listening. Thanks.